Afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Wow. Was it that bad a night? It's good to be here. I feel a little out of place, although after that first talk, I see some ties to many of the points that were rattling around in my head. So my name is Peter Ballerstead. I am the forage product manager at Barenbrug USA. And I was joking with some others that maybe the one point to make here is that the idea that there's the seed industry is wrong. This is an industry that's incredibly diverse. It's spread across the country and around the world. It varies in size, it varies in marketing. So let's talk about some of those things as we go along. It would be wrong to talk about the seed industry, and especially when we're talking about the commodity side of agriculture that's looking to implement cover cropping into its production practices. The commodity seed houses have divested themselves of many of the species that they used to be active in, that some might call primarily forages. They no longer are involved in them. So that's been separated now. And there's several other things to point out as we go along. So this is where I live, public service announcement. It's called Willamette. That's how we pronounce it. So you are now qualified to come visit us. And it is an area that has been the center for cool season grass seed production for a number of years, not just US, but worldwide. But some people may not be aware of just how small an area this is. This lighter portion right here is the Willamette Valley, an area that was formed as a result of repeated flooding at the end of the last glacial period. And so it's tremendously fertile, relatively flat, long, narrow valley, Mediterranean climate that's very good for producing seed. Barenbrug itself started in about 1904 in Netherlands. A gentleman had the idea that he could help his farmers develop better forage seed, and now Barenbrug USA is the largest subsidiary of a worldwide family of companies. But our roots are in forages. We have a turf sector that I make fun of periodically about low-yielding forage species, but in this house, we have 15 full-time equivalents in plant breeding. It's a tremendous amount of effort, primarily focused in cool season grasses, in forage legumes, in other species spread across the globe. And we have a long history of doing on-farm research or research that's out in the market area. Yes, we're in the Willamette Valley, that's where the seed's going to be produced, but we have to trial the material throughout the development process in the appropriate markets.
That's extra 7 miles.
Yeah. So there's a lot of buzz, and we hear it. We are in the seed industry, but we have a pretty good lock on what we're trying to do in turf, in forage, in consumer products. We export, we import, we do a lot of things. Cover crop is out there. But there's some questions that need to be answered, right? And there are these kinds of demonstrations that are set up throughout the country. I've seen this sort of thing done a half a dozen times, just proving once again that, pasture's best. And then second to that is cover crop. And so as a forage agronomist, I can't help but show that. But clearly, we have issues of water quality. We have issues of nutrient management. We have issues of soil erosion. And these all need to be addressed. Everyone's getting familiar with the slake test these days that demonstrates that long-term grass cover promotes more stable soil structure. This is from southern Nebraska this summer. And this is what happens after 20 minutes where identical soils, or what we were told were soils from the same map unit. One had been continuous corn for a long time with conventional tillage. The other had been long-term grass, and I'll let you guess which one it was. But even the difference in the water quality is pretty obvious. But as I listen to people, there's a lot of things that are talked about that I think the swag point would still apply to. People are talking about tests to prove or to measure, but those tests haven't been well calibrated. And so people really don't know whether, in fact, we're measuring what we say we're measuring. So these are some of the unknowns that someone in the forage side of the seed industry looks at. And I do want to, I should have said this before I launched in, I in no way am speaking for the seed industry. I'm not speaking for the Oregon seed industry. I'm speaking as a representative of Barron Brook USA. So other companies have reached different decisions. I'm just offering you the perspective that's come from our conversations as we examine things. Because this is our mission statement. This is what we hope to achieve. And frankly, a certain amount of the cover crop market as we perceive it could represent a dilution. And we'll talk about that going forward, just so that you can consider this, or maybe so you can educate me, and I'm looking forward to learning more as this session goes on. But we, as I say, have challenges meeting the market that we've developed for our forage products. And to the extent that cover crops represent the production of the same product or similar species, that represents competition for contract acres, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have our marketing philosophy that I'll talk about. So here we go, the market. What is the market? Well, is the market primarily one that's governed by commodity pricing? In other words, if we are going to invest 8 years to develop a new variety and need to recoup that expense, if we are going to go to the farmer and say, grow this variety for us under contract, they're going to say, well, I know what the standard yields, and so I want to get enough to make a comparable income from that. So then we wholesale market that out into distribution, who's also selling other cover crop products, often commodity-based. Where can we make the margins that we need to in order for that market to work? Is this a market that will be there so long as there are government payments and cost subsidies for, and what happens if those go away? What are the drivers in this market? And ultimately, we're producing products, we're producing seed in Western Oregon, and if those then have to be combined with products or seeds that are produced somewhere else, how does that product get made and delivered to a market at a cost? So for example, if rye seed is being produced in Minnesota, it makes no sense economically to bring commodity rye to Western Oregon to blend it with radish produced in the Willamette Valley to turn around and ship it out to Iowa. But so these are the challenges that we face from our side. And then the point that was mentioned, what's the criteria? If we're going to launch a breeding program, what is it that we're going to be evaluating in our plots? Now, this is assuming that we're not taking our already proven forage products and just repurposing them. Because we're not going to compete on the commodity market with our forage products. That will make our distributors very unhappy if they start seeing the A-level forage variety showing up in a commodity-priced cover crop mix. That's not going to go very far, very long. So what exactly is it that we're going to be measuring? How are we going to do that? What are the tests? Are the tests calibrated sufficiently well that we can talk about data from one place to another and that that's transferable. We understand how to do forage evaluation. We understand how to do turf evaluation. What is it that we're looking for in this? And I look forward to the conversation today. And I've already mentioned this. Somebody's got to grow it at the end of the day. You've got it. We own no land. Well, that's an overstatement. We don't farm our own land. We have to go to a farmer and write a contract and say, you agree to grow this variety for us, and we agree on the price. So we have to, it has to yield seed. So whatever your evaluation program is as you develop these or breed these varieties, please keep seed yield in mind as a critical factor to involve. And then, how to say this, farmers remember things. And in the Willamette Valley right now, there's a problem with radish seed production. So a lot of acres got placed, and it caused a problem because when it came time to pay for it, they didn't pay for it. And farmers remember that. And so the next time you go to try to place, they're going to go, nah, I don't think I want to talk to you anymore. So as the market develops, there needs to be some reality check in terms of how much seed you're actually going to need and move, because the farmer can't hold it forever, and certainly not in our business. They don't like that too much. Anybody who's familiar with Western Oregon wants this shot and probably has stopped somewhere to take the picture. This is called irony right here. This is a sign welcoming you to Linn County, Oregon, which they proudly proclaim as the grass seed capital of the world. And I hope that y'all don't need to take a horticulture class to know that that's not grass seed. That's blueberries. And right now, blueberries is a crop that's competing for a lot of grass seed acres. And when it goes in blueberries, it's going to be a long time before it ever produces grass seed again. So they have options. They can grow other things. They're not locked into just producing grass seed or whatever it is. And as mentioned, sometimes that shifts. If all of a sudden the price of wheat gets high, then we have a hard time placing acres for grass seed. And now this year, we've got a problem with some perennial grass stands, and we're waiting to see how many of them survived the extended dry period that we had that started in May instead of June. So we don't know yet what that's going to look like. So we understand this is a huge potential market. It has wide impact. But we're struggling to understand what part we can play in it. We're pretty certain that we can play in the, as was mentioned, the dual use, the what we used to call integrated livestock crop farming operations, where somebody could come in and plant one of our three improved tetraploid annual Westerwald ryegrasses, for example, into corn, so that they would have a higher quality grazing in the wintertime. We understand that. We know that. So what about these other applications where the animals aren't? What's that going to look like? So the last thing to mention is what's ahead. I happen to spend a little time thinking about future. And my hope is that we'll come to understand that as we progress now over the next 35 years and face that coming 2 billion people that's projected, we have to do things better than we've been doing. But in my mind, that points me towards improving ruminant agriculture, which gets us to utilizing cover crops as forage in the systems that have become segregated for a number of valid reasons. But I think going forward, there's a compelling reason to reintegrate ruminant livestock into some of these farming systems. And so maybe that's just a pipe dream. Maybe that's a forage agronomist talking to you. But I think that there's really good reasons to spend a little time looking at that And that's not just in this country, that's worldwide. Because I think that the grass-based agriculture, the grassland agriculture, the ruminant agriculture, really is the area with the greatest potential, because we really haven't done much with it so far. So I keep hitting this button like it'll do anything. And so maybe this is the change that we're looking at. You know, this is south central Illinois. This is 2.5 feet down into a really ugly soil. And this is what annual ryegrass can do. And this is just forage annual ryegrass. There's nothing special here. But again, how do we make that work from our perspective, from our distributor's perspective, from the farmer's perspective? One thing that should be noted is that the farmers in some parts of this country, they know how to use directory assistance, and they know how to go to farm shows, and they know how to make direct contact with the seed grower, and they're big enough that they can order a whole truckload direct from the farm. Well, how does that work with us? Because then they get in the distribution business. So there's one other thing to just mention. I've heard it mentioned, some people have expressed the desire to see certified annual ryegrass seed in the cover crop market. And I beg you to think about that real hard, because of the way certified annual ryegrass seed is produced. You're essentially selecting for the problem that you don't want. Public development of varieties is certainly one option. I can tell you that I see potential conflicts of interest that have existed, where a public institution that has released varieties gets royalties. And so when their product is up against a competing product, then strange things happen in varietal trials. I'm not casting aspersions, I'm just saying this stuff happens. So now how does that work out? How do we make that work for us? Or if the public public institution releases a variety, it's licensed. Well, there's a royalty. That gets added on to whatever has to be paid to the farmer to produce it, and then handled all the way down the line. So now you've got Dixie Crimson Clover in the marketplace at whatever that's produced and sold direct from the farmer, as opposed to something else that's got all that added onto it. So it's a complicated thing. It's obviously a place with a lot of, it's a market that's very interesting. Part of the interest is because it's so huge, but part of the interest is because it's so scary from all the unknowns. I just got done doing market projections for crop year 18, which for us starts July 2018 and runs through June 2019. So that's our planning cycle, and our research cycle is twice that long. So for us, we need to learn a lot more before we can make much of a commitment, if you understand what I'm trying to say. But that's, again, my perspective as someone with Barenbrug. Clearly, the seed industry has responded. The seed industry has produced a lot of products to fill the market, and some of that could be spoken to by members of this audience that I know more about it than I do. So at that point, I'm done, except to say thank you for the opportunity, not only to present and introduce you to Barenbrug, but also just to have the opportunity to learn from people who obviously know a great deal more about this than I do. I'll leave this up for the time being, just to give people some contact information if they'd like to get in touch with me. One of the things I've become very, very interested in is the role of the products of ruminant agriculture in human health and well-being. And so the irony of being able to pose under that sign in Nova Scotia was too much for me to resist, so I had to set up the tripod and take the picture. You can always find me by contacting Barenbrug USA. Thank you very much.
Thanks for shedding some light on the from the seed industry perspective. Is there we have time for a number of questions?
Well, just curious, and I don't know if
So the question was, how does the margin on our forage varieties compare with the margin on the turf varieties? And yeah, I'm not going to tell you specific numbers,
right.
But I can tell you that our margin on forage varieties is less than our margin on turf varieties. So it was the question, and I'll paraphrase it because I'm going to treat it as a suggestion, because the answer is no. Have we ever thought of marketing to the specialty growers, seed growers, as opposed to, or specialty growers as opposed to the commodity growers? And the answer is no. But clearly, that's something for us to consider. Thank you for that. So I'll open it up after I get done to see if you have anything to add. The question was, what is the threshold for seed yield for some of these things? And it does vary from my perspective. But for example, if you're going to talk to somebody about growing annual ryegrass, in the Willamette Valley, people understand tetraploid and Westerwald ryegrasses. They understand diploid Westerwald ryegrasses. And they understand what they will yield on average, and then many times the price that you pay is in some relation to one of those standard old varieties. So Gulf annual ryegrass, for example, people will want to know what that's going for in the market, and then your price is set a couple pennies above that.
I can give you an example. I tried to allude to this during my presentation. Years ago, USDA in Auburn, we released all stable viability. And we were looking for someone to license it. Talked to a colleague from graduate school, Don Reich, who was working at CalVest Seed. And so he went, he had his yield data, they filed it, yield data was they could achieve. And then he went with me through the calculation. They liked soil safety. But their members could not make enough money because of the transportation costs. See, it's a lot of things. It's the cost of producing in the valley, but then also getting into the market. And he alluded to that too. It doesn't make sense to shift seed, heavy seed, across creation. The blending, if that happens, it will probably do at the local level. But everyone along the way has to make money. And those of us working in the public sector often forget that. The world is driven by money, and the seed producer, they are having, if you bring a new ryegrass variety into the market, the seed producer out there will demand that he can make money, he or she can make money, at least the same he did before. So you can have the best variety in the world. It can be God's gift to cover crops. If it doesn't yield seed, it's dead. The only way you can phrase it.
Pete, we find generally that the cost shift between the South Valley and North Valley, they're looking at between $800 to $1,400 per acre gross.
So the comment was that, and again, just to talk about the Willamette Valley is an oversimplification, because South Valley, different conditions, different history than the North Valley, and what was mentioned was that the gross sort of thresholds is 800 in the south and 1,400 in the north for them to find that acceptable.
And that's related to property prices or
alternatives?
Alternatives. Yeah. You've got better soils in the north valley.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.